Hi, I'm Giacomo Mancini, and welcome to Research 2030, an Elsevier podcast series in which our hosts and guests discuss, debate, and dissect complex topics research institutions face worldwide. And welcome to our first episode of Season 2, in what we hope will prove an informative and inspirational 2021. In research circles, the word impact is often closely linked to the phrases citation metrics or university rankings. These measures have long been used to evaluate the performance of individuals and institutions. Increasingly, though, the emphasis is shifting. There is growing pressure to show how research benefits society in some meaningful way. 5 years ago, the UN Sustainable Development Goals, known as SDGs, set an ambitious 2030 target to achieve an equitable future for all. Aligning research with the SDGs has offered the academic community a valuable way to demonstrate their impact. Then, in 2019, Times Higher Education launched its Global Impact Rankings to track and report on universities' contributions towards those UN goals. In this episode, our host, Fernanda Guzmán, an Elsevier Solutions Manager, speaks with Professor Aloísio Sagrado, Head of Research at the University of São Paulo in Brazil. Professor Aloísio shares insights into the university's progress toward meeting those UN SDGs, their recognition in THE impact rankings, and how their work benefits both the University of São Paulo and Brazil.
Hello, my name is Fernanda Guzmán, and I'm a Solutions Manager for Elsevier based in Brazil. My work involves supporting clients with big data analysis, research information management, and to take better decisions based on evidence. Today, I have the honor to interview Professor Aloísio Sagrado, who runs the Institutional Research Office at the University of São Paulo. Hello, Professor. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Fernanda. Thank you very much for this invitation. It's a pleasure to talk to you. My name is Aloísio Sagrado, as you said. I am a professor of infectious diseases at the School of Medicine of the University of São Paulo, and currently I'm also in charge of the University Institutional Research Office. Our job at the Institutional Research Office is to manage academic data the best we can to provide feedback to the university governance, particularly to the rector's office, and to the academic community as well.
Thank you, Professor. It's a pleasure to have you here today to talk about the excellent performance of University of São Paulo in the last year's impact ranking published by the Times Higher Education, which is an indicator of the university's societal impact. For those of you who may not know the impact ranking, it is an initiative which tries to measure the contribution of societies to the United Nations 17 Sustainable Development Goals, such as poverty eradication, increased use of renewable energy, reduction of inequalities, etc. There were 766 institutions from 85 countries evaluated, and I'm happy to say that University of São Paulo was ranked 14th globally, which is a really good result. So my first question is related to the importance of such rankings, which not only take into consideration a university's scientific production and teaching excellence, but also try to measure the social impact of universities. How do you see the emergence of such rankings, and what is the importance of the participation of your university in these initiatives?
I see this initiative as very positively, Fernanda. It gives us an opportunity to assess the engagement of higher education institutions in the 2030 agenda of the United Nations, more specifically addressing the Sustainable Development Goals. I believe it casts light onto activities that are not traditionally analyzed in other academic rankings, with a special focus being given to the third mission of the universities, and that is their interaction with society. Particularly in Latin America, this issue is really relevant, and it's part of the cornerstones that have based our activity since the establishment of the university and that are written explicitly in our bylaws. And that is to contribute for the regional, social, and economic development. So in this kind of ranking, we are really going to focus and highlight the role universities are playing in relation to their local society.
Perfect. And we know that in three of the 17 evaluated objectives, University of São Paulo was ranked between the top 10 institutions worldwide. End of poverty was one of the objectives, clean energy, and life on land. Could you please mention some of the activities developed by the university which led to such a strong position, and probably why those objectives were particularly important for the university?
Sure. The first thing I would say in regards to your question is to clarify to those who listen to us the methodology of the assessment of the ranking. Whenever considering interaction with society and communities, the ranking system puts light into two different aspects: actions that are undertaken addressing the academic community, and these are internal policies, and on the other hand, actions that were addressing the external community, society at large. So for each one of these three SDGs you highlighted, in which we had a very good performance, let me just share with you some of the initiatives that were described and that really drew attention of the evaluators. Concerning end of poverty, I would say that internally, this probably had to do with the affirmative actions that have been recently put in place by the University of São Paulo, in parallel to other activities that are being done in other higher education institutions in Brazil. The positive discrimination action aims to enhance diversity within the student body, and that means to increase the numbers of underrepresented minorities in the study, in the student body. And we did this in two different ways, establishing racial quota, and that is assigning some slots for freshmen that belong to the African Brazilian community or native Brazilian community. And for that, we used self-reported skin color of applicants. But we also used an incentive for students who had their full pre-college education in public schools. And here in Latin America, this is a very important proxy of low socioeconomic status, so that students who have been exclusively educated in public schools are most likely coming from the lowest socioeconomic ranks of society. These two actions have been in place for maybe 5 years already, 5 to 6 years, and are already showing what they are here for in terms of increasing diversity in the student body, and in parallel, ensuring those students from underrepresented minorities or low socioeconomic status families would perform as well as their counterparts. The other action that was done with this aim for the internal community was to put together a number of initiatives to ensure retainment of those students. They were ever underrepresented in the student body, but we didn't want just to admit them without giving them the chance to go through the educational process successfully and really completing their degree programs. So a number of financial aid programs, including scholarships, housing support, and subsidized meals are already in place. And these have really been scored very highly, which helped our performance in that particular SDGs. As for the external community, end of poverty actions were exemplified by a number of initiatives that include social project incubators. So we have teams working in incubation offices with the community, trying to solve local problems in the communities that surround our campuses. And one particular project I would like to highlight is the GRACE project. This so-called GRACE project is a project to encourage female students to engage in careers in the computer science and entrepreneurship areas, which are traditionally male-dominated. And therefore, having these pre-college girls, high school girls, coming to the university and talking about prospects of future careers have really empowered them to apply for a position at the university. Now, let's move to another SDG, and that is clean energy. We did perform very well in that SDG as well. And I think that was due to the fact that we are working very hard in sustainability policies on our 7 campuses, which are spread throughout the state of São Paulo, putting together local monitoring and evaluation projects to assess energy consumption, and also implementing a number of initiatives to foster carbon-free transport, for instance, by providing bicycling lanes and free bicycles for students to move around the campus to their commute system with the subway or the local buses that can bring them back home. And for the external community, a lot of effort has been put in one particular project that is being run by our engineering school, Escola Politécnica in São Paulo, with partnership with local communities, that is trying to develop innovative solutions in energy use, using solar energy and other aspects to really contribute to the spilling over of these initiatives from the campus into the surrounding communities. And finally, the third SDG you mentioned, Fernanda, was Life on Earth. For this particular SDGs, we very carefully described internal initiatives involving our ecological reserves. As I have mentioned before, the University of São Paulo is spread in 7 different campuses throughout the state of São Paulo. And in some of these cities, we are very lucky to have a very large surface of campus that includes native forests and a lot of biodiversity. So a number of projects are in place to make sure we can sustain that richness that can be found in those campuses. And for the external community, sustainability is being worked by means of, for instance, projects that are involving the local community in solid waste management. And for instance, transforming solid waste into biofuels. And the University of São Paulo has a long tradition in research about biofuels. And now these initiatives are trying to translate the knowledge that is being created in the university in those research projects by those research groups into actions that can really be translated into benefit for the local communities that surround us.
Thank you. These are really interesting initiatives. Now, Professor, part of the indicators that compose the ranking are extracted automatically from Scopus, but the institutions need to provide evidence of the activities developed, such as the ones you just mentioned. How did you gather such evidence, and how many people were involved from which departments?
This was really a challenge, and I can tell you that we prepared ourselves to be able to provide robust data during the previous year to the data collection process. So we contacted different faculties, academic staff, and administrators in order to tell them and to share with them the importance of participating in this kind of ranking, the novelty that was involved in this particular assessment, and trying to raise their awareness of the possibility of showcasing different initiatives that were already in place at the university. I think this was an excellent opportunity for us to to help us deepen our self-knowledge about the whole, the institution itself. We work in a very large institution with more than 60,000 undergraduate students and 30,000 graduate students with about 6,000 to 7,000 professors. And of course, within the university, we still don't know very well what is going on in this large institution. So raising awareness about the possibility of showcasing all these initiatives was really very rewarding. We had a lot of groups involved. I would say certainly more than 50 different people were involved. We distributed data collection forms that were addressing the different sectors of the administration and the different faculties and research institutes. And at first, we classified the SDGs according to our expectation of which SDGs, each one of those sectors and schools would more likely be involved in. But what was really surprising is that we got in return many manifestations of people, of actors in the process that were willing to share more information or to share information about other SDGs they hadn't been originally asked about. So that meant that we, in fact, did not really know to what extent the academic community was involved in the United Nations 2030 agenda. And this was an excellent opportunity for us to put together a baseline data set that we, of course, are going to use in the following years, updating that information and making this database even more accurate.
This is a really impressive exercise. And as a result of the ranking, were there any internal policies that the university decided to review or reinforce?
Yes, this was a positive, let's say, side effect. In fact, I think we really highlighted the commitment of the academic community with the SDG agenda. And this made it very clear for the academic community that we needed to improve our data collection process. At first, we were asking for information, providing spreadsheets to be filled out. But in the process, we decided to have a digital database put together. So this is still under development. We have a task force that has this particular goal set, and we expect to have, before the beginning of the next semester, this digital database already running that will be able to provide automatically all the different indicators we need to showcase. We also had two other very important initiatives that were byproducts of our participation in the ranking, and these were funding opportunities with the university budget that were SDG related. One, addressing the possibility of providing seed money for research groups that would be involved in interdisciplinary research projects that would relate to one of the 17 SDGs. And the other call for funds was for the community to apply with extension projects that could also receive some seed money. So this is, as I say, a byproduct of our involvement in the process, with the idea that it's not only important to showcase what is in place, what is already being implemented, but also try to broaden our action in that regard. We also have added an SDG component to our website, flagging to our institutional research office website, and we are developing a system in which we are going to flag all the different initiatives relating them to the particular SDGs they address.
Now, Professor, there is a common discussion about ranking versus rating. Some people advocate that it would be better to have a rating system which classifies institutions in bands, like band A, B, or C, rather than a ranking. Do you believe a rating system could be fairer and more useful to the universities?
Yes, this is a very interesting discussion. Drawback of the ranking system is that the community in general does not really understand what those positions really mean and what the mobility we usually see from one year to the other, a long time, really means. So sometimes we see misinterpretations of ranking results, just saying that one particular university did very well or did very badly in that particular year, without really understanding that just going down one or two positions doesn't mean anything. So this is a backlash of the rate of the ranking system, and therefore a rating system could also be considered as a good alternative. In fact, I would say, Fernanda, that many of the traditional rankings, they also have a rating process embedded in the evaluation system, because they rank, let's say, the first 100 or 200 positions, and from that point on, they usually rate in bands, in 50 institution bands, from 200 to 250 and so forth. So this is already there, but the rating system with fixed positions is still there. I think the one issue we should discuss in this regard is the possibility of moving towards a more multidimensional approach. Some novel initiatives have already been launched in some rankings that do not rank the institutions in positions or bands, but rather provide radar graphs in which they can show in different dimensions the strengths and the opportunities for improvement within each university. Just by seeing those radar graphs, one institution can really be able to make a comparative analysis in terms of benchmarking, to search for strategic partnerships with similar institutions, with institutions that have, let's say, the similar strengths, or even with complementary institutions, institutions that might be really different from the one we work at, but whose particular strengths are complementary to ours, and so that a synergistic partnership could be built. So I think having this more multidimensional approach could also be beneficial for institutions to really define strategic partnerships with other academic institutions.
This is a very interesting suggestion. I quite like that. We saw, Professor, that in addition to University of São Paulo, there were another 29 Brazilian universities listed in the ranking. What advice would you give to universities that wish to participate in such rankings or they want to improve their position?
Yes, this is also a very interesting aspect you're raising. And we have been working a lot with that since the results of the ranking were shared with the academic community globally. We have been contacted by a number of Brazilian institutions who didn't even take part in the ranking in that year, 2019, and that were willing to join the ranking in the following year. So we discussed a lot what our learning process was and shared with them some of the difficulties we had so that they would maybe overcome those more easily, would not have to face them from scratch. And we also shared the idea for the need to foster the data collection process. I think this is a particularly important issue. We were not prepared. We wouldn't have been prepared to participate last year if we had not gone through that preparation step. And so we try to share with the other institutions that they should get prepared first. And the other aspect is that I think it's not just a matter of participating in the ranking process. I think the ranking results, which in our case were very rewarding, they also gave us a chance to make a reflection of what those results really meant. So we think one important part of the ranking results is that they give us the opportunity to feed the institution back on initiatives that should be implemented or strengthened because of the real impact they make. So I think it's crucial for us to really share this experience with other Brazilian institutions. If more Brazilian institutions take part in the ranking, I think the whole Brazilian higher academic institution will benefit as a whole. And I truly believe we will have more institutions participating this year. As you probably know, the data collection process is already over. So we are looking forward to receiving the results and really checking whether we had a widening of the Brazilian participation in the Times Higher Education Impact Ranking this year.
Yeah, I'm eager to see that as well. And talking about reflection, changing a little bit the focus of our conversation, I wanted to draw attention to the COVID-19 pandemic and how it showed the importance of science to society and highlighted the role of universities in science development. Do you believe that society perceptions of the role of universities will change after the pandemic? And if so, how?
Yes, this is very important for us. As you know very well, Fernanda, we are under a socio-political environment currently in Brazil that is not very favorable for science and higher education. That has been a movement that involved media and government officers that really questioned the important role of higher education institutions and scientific initiatives in general. And again, this was also related to the response we tried to build against the pandemic. But I have no doubt that we can showcase our importance very clearly in this very tragic event of the pandemic. We certainly came out with very innovative solutions for this public health emergency. Having research initiatives being funded by the university itself, trying to get research funds from private partners in large amounts to develop emergency solutions for a problem that had really hit us very hard. So I can tell you, in a very short period of time, we were able to put together over 200 research teams at USP that were working together in an interdisciplinary fashion that had never been seen before in that extent to try to come out with innovative solutions that ended up with ventilators that were built with support of health investigators and in clinical engineers, of positioning cushions for those patients with severe respiratory failure that have to be put in a proper position to improve their physiological conditions so that they can keep breathing, even though they have been severely affected by this respiratory viral infection. Development of diagnostic tests at a time when diagnostic tests for COVID-19 were scarce in the country, we were able to put together 19 research laboratories in a network that provided together COVID diagnosis for the health system, for our unified health system. Apart from that, I cannot forget to talk about the vaccine trials that were undertaken and developed in the university and all the molecular epidemiological studies with the new coronavirus that involved researchers from the university. So I believe we really did very well in that regard. So we came out even when the government seemed not to be responding as we had expected. We came out and very rapidly really put all our effort into trying to come with those solutions. And we interacted with the government of the state of Sao Paulo. For instance, we were called upon to provide emergency care to patients with severe COVID-19. What did we do? We very rapidly transformed our academic health center here, Hospital das Clínicas in São Paulo, in a COVID-designated hospital that quickly provided, from January to March, provided over 300 intensive care unit beds and 500 ward beds exclusively for patients with COVID-19. With this unprecedented response to this high burden of care that we had, I think we really played a pivotal role in providing care in this emergency situation, contributing to avoid the collapse of our public healthcare system in a mega city like São Paulo. So this was something that really showed how the potential we have to be rapidly mobilized, and it was a counter argument for those who say that the universities are very rigid in their traditions and that they have low room for adaptability and flexibility. I think we really showed this is not true. We adapted ourselves, we were flexible, and we gained a lot of visibility from the society, not only in the country, but also abroad. The only thing I cannot be sure of is to what extent this really will translate into a more sustained financial support from the government in the long run. We have been able to do a lot. We received a lot of governmental support. We showed we are able to build public-private partnerships, and we received a significant amount of donations. But I cannot really tell you, Fernanda, if this is going to be sustained as a real effect, a real outcome of our deep involvement in this emergency.
Well, it's really impressive and inspiring to hear about all the initiatives that the university has developed during the pandemic. And I really hope it does translate into sustainable financial support so they can keep going and much more can be done. Now, back to the ranking. Can we expect University of São Paulo to be among the top 10 institutions in this year edition of the Impact Ranking?
Fernanda, we would really be very happy to see that. We are hardly motivated by our experience in the first year. We got prepared to do even better in the second year. Our rector was asked to share this experience in international forums. So we really expect to do at least as well, but if possible, even better this time. We are really motivated, and we believe this is important for our future. It's crucial for us to show the Brazilian society that the University of São Paulo and its fellow higher education institutions are important players in the Brazilian society for development, for economic development, social development, and the possibility of adding up to this necessary rapid responsiveness that is required when we have these emergencies in the future. So I would be very gratified to see if we have at least a similar performance or even a better outcome this time.
Thank you very much, Professor. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I look forward to seeing the University of São Paulo's position in the upcoming ranking.
Thank you very much, Fernanda. It was our pleasure to share this experience, and we hope to work in collaboration with other Brazilian institutions and Latin American partners in order to build a network of universities that are really giving the necessary relevance to the third mission of our institutions and addressing our close interaction with the nearby society.
It's clear that for Professor Aloisio and the University of São Paulo, ensuring that research contributes to society is more than just a goal. It is a mission. For the university, this work has two major strands: their on-campus activities and the initiatives they run for and with the community to create a more equitable and sustainable Brazil. It's inspiring to hear that the data collected for the THE Impact Rankings has already sparked new sustainability initiatives at the institution. Equally inspiring is the university's desire to help other institutions in Brazil map their societal impact. The University of São Paulo has openly shared lessons learned during the data collection process and ideas for improvements. For example, the story Professor Aloisio shares relating to the pandemic shows the university's passion to give back to the people of Brazil. We want to thank Professor Aloisio and Fernanda for sharing the University of São Paulo's story with us on Research 2030. If you have any questions or comments to share with us about this episode or the podcast in general, we would love to hear them. Send us an email at research2030@elsevier.com. That's research2030@elsevier.com. Interested in learning more about the United Nations SDGs or Professor Aloisio and the University of São Paulo? Our show notes share more information and links to explore. Again, I'm Giacomo Mancini, and thank you for listening to this episode of Research 2030. Oh, and please don't forget to sign up to Research 2030 on your favorite podcast provider. That way you'll be the first to hear about new episodes.